This is a spiritual reading being given for Monica Martins Hickel on Saturday the 13th of June 2026 in Victoria, Australia by John Rawson. We stand within the Hall of Memory and the Book of Life is given into our hands. The Book of Life, or the Book of the Soul, you might call it, Monica, is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations that the soul has entered into since it first descended from the spiritual worlds and took on a physical covering. And over thousands and thousands and thousands of years, that covering becomes the reality to the incarnating mind. So therefore, the questions that you've asked, and they are all very insightful questions, are to do not so much with the soul, but with the covering that has accreted or assembled itself around the soul, if you can understand. So when we penetrate to the reality of the soul, we will find that the soul is none of these things, that the reality of your being is quite different. But those accretions, those coverings, armor, if you like, that have become part of your self-identity, they are not just assembled at random. No, they are acquired over lifetime after lifetime. So we will have to visit some of these lifetimes which are formative, to answer your questions, but also other lifetimes which reveal themselves in greater potential and suggest where you might express yourself in this incarnation and what gifts the soul has yet to unfold. Now, the Book of the Soul, as I've called it, has on its cover, first of all, it's got a beautiful deep red maroon cover, and that deep red is the colour of life. It's like blood. It flows. It wants to produce existence and to produce awareness, and it is connected with entering into experiences. Sometimes those experiences are joyful and sometimes they're sad and painful, but nevertheless your soul came into incarnation in the very first instance in order to experience the highs and the lows that only human existence could give it. And it's interesting that your soul didn't incarnate particularly early. No, it first came into incarnation in what we term the period of Atlantis, which is the name we give the consciousness of humanity that reigned from about 300,000 years ago to about 60,000 years ago, more or less. And that's a very long period of time, but it was, your soul was quite late in coming into incarnation because it didn't have that thirst for physical life that afflicted so many human souls in the beginning. And so for a start, your soul had to, as it were, catch up. And it did this by accelerating the rate and the number and the intensity of experiences, which, because it's only through experience that the soul grows. Experience, each experience is a lesson for the soul, and it might be a great lesson, but more often it's a lesson that brings us up and says, why do I experience this pain, this disability, this feeling of lack? And each time we experience a feeling of lack within self, that's good, because it means that we're listening to the soul. The soul wants to tell us how to become a full, integrated individual. So you are, I'll put this another way, from life to life, the patterns illustrated on the cover of this Book of the Soul will, as it were, soak into each individual incarnation, sometimes very strongly, sometimes much less so, in a more diluted fashion. Now, the next aspect of the Book of the Soul is the picture. Now, this picture indicates the original purposes of the soul when it came from the spiritual worlds into incarnation. And this image changes, really, but the core meaning of it doesn't. So the way I see the image, the symbol, is that you are dressed as a very old-fashioned knight. Very old. I mean, say about 600 BC, perhaps 1000 BC. But you're dressed in armor, and you're holding in your hand, and you're looking through a helmet, a bit like a medieval helmet. But you're looking at this beautiful pink flower, sort of like a, not really a rose, more like a dahlia, I suppose, but it's pink. Now, what this means is that you, that is the soul that incarnates, has surrounded itself or put on this armor, which it needs to take off so that the reality or the soul can express in freedom. At the moment, you must feel imprisoned in terms of your behaviors and your responses and reactions to life's situations. And none of us like to be imprisoned into old behaviors and reaction patterns. So these are great questions that you have asked, because it indicates that you will break out of that armor. And sometimes it's done through, something like a sledgehammer in life. Something comes along and hits you and breaks that armor up. But more often, the experiences of life gradually dissolve that around you. And I think that we are going to see that over the next 5 years or so, that, in fact, you're actually in the middle of this process right now. It's been going on for about 3 or 4 years. But over the next 5 years or so, you will discover that these old patterns become less and less binding. They are chains no more. They are chains that are dissolved or unlocked for you. Then there is a third aspect to the Book of the Soul, and that is it has a name, or at least you have a name. one might say the soul has a name, and that name describes the purpose of the soul. And the name, as I see it, is the defender of life. The defender of life. And that might mean that you, say, become a lawyer and stand up in court and defend clients. Or you become a therapist and you try, and or a doctor, and you try and help save lives in a physical or psychological sense. But it can have another meaning too, because life is the life force, and the life force is like, as I perceive it, it's like a separate body that surrounds you, and that life force has the potential, that life body has the potential to become a great energy within you, not just within you, but within other souls too. And that energy, when it begins to, it's like a wheel, a great big wheel that you, it takes a lot of energy to move, but once you start to move it, it generates greater and greater impetus until it becomes a power in its own right, so that you have the potential to become a power within the world. Now, we're going to open the book, and the book, as I said, contains the other incarnations, but we shall resist for a moment the temptation to open it to other pages, and we shall turn it to the page of this current life. Now, here, the soul depicts itself in two ways. On the right-hand page, this open book, it portrays itself as colours, and these are the colours of the aura, and each colour is an energy that the soul is able to express, or sometimes it's an energy that the soul needs to work on, or purify, or make stronger. But we will give those shortly. On this second side, on the left-hand side, is a short title, and that indicates the main purpose for this incarnation. Let's go to the right-hand side, the beautiful coloured imagery that the soul assembles as the aura. And the first colour, which, if you imagine yourself standing inside an oval, then just on the edge of that oval is this colour pink, light rose if you like. And that's the colour that represents the energy, the life energy of the person. Now, if it's light rose, that's slightly problematic. It would be better if it were light red, which, as we've already said, is the colour of energy, the colour of life energy. When it's light rose, it indicates an innate sensitivity, a very sensitive nature. And that can manifest in an artistic sense, in an affinity for colour or for sound or for beauty. It can manifest in almost a psychic intuition. It can manifest in being very sensitive to the opinions of other people. It's also quite pale, which means that it hasn't been strengthened yet by the individuality. However, that's Light Red. It's got its own, sorry, Light Rose. It's got its own gifts and its own challenges. Then around that is a darker brown colour. And that's an interesting colour to have there, because brown is practicality. It's as though you feel you've got to be dealing all the time with the practical things about life. And when the colour is dark, it's as though you have less say in the matters. It's as though you feel, because light rose, you see, is very feeling and picks up on what other people want. You have to be careful that you don't become a people pleaser and do things just because you can sense what someone else's wants. So the path of least resistance is to put what you want aside and go down and try and please the other person, do things for them. And the darker browns indicate controlling energies within the life. And sometimes this is an indication that you have to work very hard in life at whatever vocation or career or craft or discipline that you have taken on board. And that's not a bad thing. We should all work hard. We should all practice. Practice is the cornerstone, the foundation of progress. No practice, no progress. So that's a good thing. And it means to me that you have the ability to focus and to graft away at times and to be a bit of a perfectionist, perhaps. That's unusual, considering that you've got the light rose. They're not generally perfectionists. But you could be a bit pedantic about having things a certain way. Okay, we'll move on from that because we'll come back to some of these colours later. Around that is a third colour, orange. And this is a very unusual mix of colours, because orange is the individuality. Now, when I use the term individuality, what I mean is that at the core of every soul is the spark of the divine, if you like. In the Old Testament, it's called the I Am. Moses meets it in the desert and says, "Who are you?" to the God he sees in the burning bush. And the God says, "I am who I am." Or, in modern translations, "I will be who I will be." Even better. But that spark, which in Moses' time was outside, is now inside. But it's only a spark. And the great purpose of each incarnation is to grow the spark. So it becomes, in its turn, a flame. And the more that we can live from our own individuality, our own uniqueness, which no one else can have, that's why it's called the I Am in the Bible, because only you can say, "I am." I can't say, "I am" for you, neither can anyone else. You can say, "I am" for yourself, and you're the only person that can do that. That's where you are completely unique. And when we can learn to stand in that uniqueness, that is when the storms and the winds and the traumas of life cannot move us. Now, you're coming towards that in your life. It takes 50 years basically, to work to the point where the, what would one call it? I don't want to call it the false self, but the self that the soul has created for this particular incarnation, its work is fulfilled. And when we come into incarnation, we don't just come into incarnation bearing crowns on our heads and playing harps and distributing roses all over the place. No, we come in because we've got work to do. Every incarnation, there's a job, often several jobs. And this is what, in our school, in our teachings, we call karma, the karmic slate, the karmic record. So, before you come into incarnation, you have a chat with the Lord of Karma, who is the spiritual being, if you like, who's in charge of everyone's karma. And you and he have a little chat and decide what karma you're going to work on in this life. And the Lord of Karma will help you to organize parents, who will help give you the foundations that you need. And perhaps in this incarnation you didn't need supportive parents. Well, I hope you did have supportive parents. But the Lord of Karma might say, no, I think you need parents, or one parent who's going to be very controlling and put you down and tell you that you don't know what you're doing, to block your opinions, be hard on you if you disagree with them, you know, all this sort of stuff. So that conditions the child to enter into adulthood. And adulthood in the spiritual sense starts about the age of 30. And the adult phase lasts from 30 to 49 or 30 to 50. And in that time, you then replay all the karma. So in that time, the personality is important. For example, it would be important that you would find it difficult to show your opinion and disagree with someone. It would be important that you hadn't learned to defend yourself, and you wouldn't have the opportunity in that 30-year period. And it would be important for that you had that personality to take everything so personally. But you see, that personality is a vehicle. It's a vehicle through which you can repay and rebalance karmic debts that you have incurred from earlier lifetimes. And we'll come back to that. But what I find remarkable is that your individuality, which is represented by that orange colour, is trying to get in now. It presses on you. It wants to be, it doesn't want to be on the outside, it wants to be on the inside. It's a very unusual position for orange. And so, therefore, you find that you're questioning yourself about all these personality aspects that you've discovered. We will come back to that. From the shoulders, a dark purple. Blues. Oh, that's interesting. Blues within the head. Oh, I would have expected yellows there. But no, blues within the head. And the vortex as we see it is yellow. Around the hands, greens. And around the feet and calves, brown. The aura has a symbol in it. I see you, it's in front of you, which means it's present, where you're kneeling on the ground with a little trowel, and you're turning over a patch of gardening there. The image on the left shows you sitting on a throne in a suit of armor, and the image on the right shows you walking down a path towards a sort of a portal with one pillar on either side of the path and this sign above it, supported on the two pillars, and beyond the portal is the rising sun. Now, that's in the future, so we want to progress, hopefully, to the future. And then the symbol of the over-self hovers about 4 inches above the head here, and as we see it, it shows you inside a tower looking at a very droopy flower. And all these symbols have relevance to what you've been doing in the past and what the soul wants to communicate to you about how things should develop in the future. Now, I want to begin with the first colour, which is the light rose. And there is an incarnation that comes immediately here. And this is about 700-800 years before Christ, I think. We see you in the, I don't know, the ancient Greek Minoan Trojan civilization. And here you live in the city of Troy. I don't know if you're familiar with Homer and the Iliad, but that turns out to be based in fact that Troy did exist. And it was raided by the Greeks, by the way. And here we see you in a male body, and as I see you, you're quite old, and you have you're a minor noble in the court. You live within the city, and you were part of the guards around the king. But of course, the stage I see you're retired, got grey hair, got grandchildren that you love to give stories to, got a beautiful daughter. You live with her and her husband. But the Greeks attack and storm the city, and so you put on the old armor and go out to defend the king. But of course, you're no longer young, you're much older now, and you are taken captive by one of the Greek captains. But they don't kill you because you were an important person. So when they have looted the city, you and many others are taken back as slaves to Greece. And because you were such an important person, the Greeks took great delight in humiliating you and pretending to ask your advice, and then mocking you and pouring scorn upon you, and making you perform menial tasks. So you finished that life as an absolute slave. And I would say that that's got a lot to do, by the way, with why you would find it difficult to show opinions and disagree today. But there is another incarnation, which is interesting because it has a sort of similarities. And this incarnation is early in the 20th century. Here you're in a female body. Let me see. I think it's the last part of the 19th century. And as I see you, you are in London. You came from quite a wealthy family, but you were very artistic, so you didn't want to have them marry you off and you become the slave of some male misogynist. So you ran away to London, and there you struggled to make a living for yourself through painting. You actually knew people, or you were associated with people there in the arts world. For example, you knew someone called William Butler Yeats. Mm-hmm. And you were associated also with certain occult or esoteric movements, but your art was heavily criticized by the establishment. So you died quite young from a heart attack, which perhaps was almost, you died of a broken heart, because what you valued was not recognized. So again, you bring into this incarnation the impression that who you are and what you are is not worth anything. And so, of course, you'd be terrified to show your opinion. Of course, you'd be terrified to disagree with other people. You had, in both incarnations, in order to survive, both as a slave and also as the female artist, you had to please other people. And in the case of the female artist, whose name first name is Genevieve, you had to sort of exist by cultivating a clientele of people that you would pander to and do little things for, like create miniature portraits of themselves and their pets, and you felt this was devaluing your own artistic gift. You had an incarnation in, I'm not sure what it would be now, I presume it's Mexico, but it was in the Mayan period, I think that's the correct term, it's about 400 years after Christ, where you were in a male body and you were an architect and you built temples. And I'm not sure whether the Mayans had pyramids, but I see you creating pyramids, perhaps step pyramids, and aligning them with astronomical events or astronomical bodies like the Sun, and strangely enough, I think with Venus for some reason. But in this incarnation, you were single, you never married. You led a very self-centered life. But it wasn't about yourself that you were centered, it was about your work. And you saw your work as contributing to the health of the nation and to the health and well-being of the land around you, and somehow you felt that the buildings that you created were essential to maintain and increase the fertility of the country and the crops. Second colour, brown. That's an interesting incarnation. The first century of the Christian era, the common era. We see you again in a male body. Round about the year 70 AD, I think. Here you live in a city called Tyre, which I think then was in Palestine, and you are born into family as a slave. Oh, I don't know where all the slavery stuff's coming from, Monica, but you became part of a revolt by the Palestinians against the Romans, and you took up arms, but because you'd been a slave and you'd never, how can I put it, you'd never been taught how to use a sword, you fell in the first skirmish against the seasoned Roman legionnaires. And interestingly enough, and I think there's another reason for this too, but interestingly enough, you would be, of course it's in a metaphorical sense now, you're not going to pick up a sword and have a go at people, but because you died trying to defend yourself, the soul has remembered that as being killed because you were trying to defend yourself. So now you can't defend yourself. But there is another reason for that, by the way. And that is that you had an incarnation in China. Again, in a male body, where this is during the period of the Mongol invasion. Now, the Mongols captured, took the city where you were the ruler. And they stationed a garrison there. But you, because you're Chinese, loathed the invaders. It was only a small garrison, about 20 people. You organized for your own soldiers to steal the weapons and then to force them out of the city where they were confronted by the army of the Chinese emperor and promptly slaughtered. So because he deprived those soldiers of their own defence, you are today unable to defend yourself. It's a rebound karma, if you can understand me. However, may I say that all those karmas, they are completed, finished. There's no reason now why you shouldn't learn to defend yourself. But it's not, learning to defend oneself is not about becoming argumentative, hostile, aggressive, combative. No. Unless, you can't defend yourself unless you know yourself. You grab me. What is there to defend? Just an opinion. Who cares about an opinion? But if you find yourself and you stand from in yourself, then there is no need to mount a defense, because you are the defense and nothing will move you. No one will change your mind. No one will force you to do anything that you don't think you should do. Now you're coming into that period of your life. Incarnation in Portugal in the 16th century. Here you're in a female body, woman's body, and you're a farmer. Well, farmer, you live on a farm. You tend the garden. You go to market. So that's a good life. It's a quiet life. You're married. You should have a good relationship with that person. If you encounter them in this incarnation, they should be kind, helpful, and supportive influence within your life. And you had 3 or 4 children in that incarnation. You like to dance. And you like to play an instrument that looks to me a bit like a tambourine. So you had a bit of a... It wasn't just a life of drudgery. You were able to create a life where you worked very hard, but where you also had a playful streak and a playful nature and were able to be creative in terms of what it goes around you. And you and your husband built a big farm. So it indicates you have the ability to start with something small and build it into something much larger, and to create something that works and something where people can work together and interrelate, and where you can assign people to jobs and missions and allocate tasks. You should be good at that sort of thing. It's interesting though that you're better in dealing with people when you respond rather than just assert. So as long as you are not having to make the play happen, as long as you're not having to be the playmaker, I suppose is the term, as long as you can listen to what's around you, observe, and then respond to the needs of the situation, you will create a satisfaction in life. If you jump in and try and lead things and try and direct people and try and be the mover and shaker, you're going to end up feeling pretty frustrated. But you are able to build and manifest and generate within your life. The oranges. Orange, as I've said, is the colour of individuality. This is an interesting incarnation. Incarnation in Tibet. In, I think, about the 12th century, here you are in a male body. You are a monk, I presume, a Buddhist monk. You lived in one of the monasteries. You taught children, you know, as I see you, I think I said, see you in a male body, and I see you surrounded by little children who adored you. And also you taught the older monks the scriptures and the teachings that had been communicated with you. And your teaching was very metaphysical, metaphorical, mystical, I'm not quite sure what. But your teaching was that everything originated from, I want to say from self, but that's not quite right. Everything originated from the reactions and actions and connections and energies of the self, the not the real self, not the divine self, but the human self, the normal human consciousness. And so one had to unpick these energies one at a time, a bit like untangling a ball of string or unpicking a knitted garment where you have to tease out the strands of wool. And so in your teaching, everything began with self, and there was nothing, in the end, there was nothing in the universe except self. Now, there's only one problem with that, and that is that that teaching, if you took it to its conclusion, left you with nothing, because there'd be nothing left. And that is a teaching of one part of Buddhism, that there is nothing there, that you take it all apart and you vanish into nothingness, nirvana. However, the deeper teachings said when you unpick the self, then everything dissolves, that false perception dissolves. And then you, instead of finding nothing, you find reality, the real self, the Buddha nature, if you like. Now, the thing is that you've come into incarnation with yet another one of these strands, so to speak, attached to you. That there is a huge level of spirituality in someone who says, yes, it all comes back to me, it's all my fault. But then one has to go below that, because it's true, everything that we experience, we create. We create our lives. We create our relationships. But the guilt is interesting, because of that incarnation, that There is, how can I put it, an understanding of reality. Because what you're giving me here, that you feel everything so personal, my reaction is to feel guilty. Really, what you're giving me here is a very spiritual energy. It's just that it's the wrong. It's slightly out of, how can I put it, slightly out of focus. Slightly out of focus, and all you need to do is to shift your focus slightly, and you would find, number one, everything is personal. Everything does originate from you, because you are God, let's face it. You create the world. When you go to sleep at night, the world disappears. You wake up in the morning, like God, you've recreated it. So yes, you are responsible for everything that you perceive. But then to take upon yourself the responsibility for what you perceive, okay, it's a very subtle point here, is seeing things incorrectly, because in so doing, you deny other people the chance to be as creative as you. And we should all be creative in terms of our own lives. So you can take responsibility for what you do. But if you take responsibility for what someone else does, you are trying to control them in your mind. Don't feel guilty. You should feel bad. You're trying to be a controlling person. If you're making yourself feel guilty because of something that you think you've done, someone else has done, that's a way of controlling your relationship to that other person. And that system of control is not going to work very well, because it's a compensatory mechanism, because of the incarnations as a slave, and you feel that you're out, you don't have control. So this is a subtle way of trying to assert control in your life. But hey, that's going to be past. That's all been gone. We're moving on here. And I think I indicated earlier in the reading that you've come to the end of that period in your life, that you had to develop this personality that you've described in three insightful phrases. Well, what happens to that personality once it's served its purpose? Well, two things can happen. Number one, we can hold on to it. Part of us can say, oh, I quite like being this person. Part of me quite likes not daring to give my opinion. Part of me quite likes feeling guilty. Or you can just say, hey, that's the past. It's all going to pass away. And everything passes away. I'm sorry to say, including you and me one day. Hopefully not for you, not so soon. But everything passes. Everything we think about ourselves or think we know about ourselves passes. That's why we live, why we come into incarnation. So it can pass away. So it can dissolve. Karma for you finished about 3 years ago, but it doesn't, it's not like switching a light off or switching a light on. It's not instant. It takes about 7 years before the soul is able to communicate to the personality that, hey, the past is over, we can move on. So that the first 7 years, which go from about, I don't know, 49 to 57, 50 to 57, thereabouts, that's a time of letting go of who we thought we were, allowing ourselves to become new in so many different ways. At the, I think it's a, for you, just having a look here, yeah. Then, about the age of 58, 59, you'll experience what astrologers call a Saturn return, and that's completion of this seven-year period. And I would characterize the period that you're in as a transition to independence and maturity. When we have a consciousness that we are controlled by outside circumstances, that really means that we're still in that child phase, because that's where, what a child is. A child is controlled by its parents. But the adult sometimes shifts this and says, no, I'm being controlled by the traumas or the memories of my mother or this, that or the other. My psychological profile is controlling me. Well, now's the time to just let all of that go and discover that you are quite a different person. The deep purples indicate that you have a mission in life to be a mediator, but that won't start probably for another 4 or 5 years. That there is a great part of you that, because it's experienced submission and loss of control, will be able to help other people through that and lead them over a bridge, so to speak, to clarify and to connect with their own individuality. The blues inside the head, that's very spiritual. I'm glad you've got some browns elsewhere, because the blues, although they're very spiritual and indicate that you should look at yourself as a spiritual being, you should see yourself as an eternal being, not bound by this physical body, not bound by the psychology and the behavioral stuff that goes on. You're beyond that. That's what the blue says. But it's hard when you've got the blue there inside the head. It's hard to set boundaries and define and say, I'm going to do this to this point and then I'm going to do something else. So allow yourself to set milestones within the life and be open to spiritual energies that are coming towards you. And the great spiritual energy that's coming towards you is actually in the yellow vortex, which indicates that in the next 5 years, there should be a process of new understanding, new insight, and new thinking coming in. Sometimes people go to university and do courses when they're like that. But I think it's more likely that you'll meet up with a group of people who share your consciousness and who share your goals and whom you feel comfortable journeying with. The images . The person on the left in your aura, sitting on a throne, clad in armour, it's you. So this incarnation, it's been time to discard some of that armour. And so when we discard armour, we become vulnerable. We become malleable. We become open to people. And that's not a bad thing. If you feel you've had to adapt to the opinions and the behaviours of other people, that also is a strength, because not everyone can do that. So it indicates that you've actually fulfilled that part, because that comes from a life where you were very opinionated and had very strong dictates and were very good at controlling other people. So this incarnation, there's a reversal of that. Then the image in front, which is the present, shows you on your knees with a little trowel in a garden, and you're digging around plants, planting new seedlings. And that indicates that you're in a process of adaptation and preparation. So you've got to do the preparation for the future. As the gardeners say, you have to prepare the soil. So you prepare the soil, you plant for the future. And yes, well, you have to do the little things. You have to get the routines in place. You have to be persistent with your work on yourself. The symbol of the over-self is a communication from the I Am, from the divine self. And no one, no clairvoyant, no matter how great, can perceive your I Am, because as I said, that is unique to you. But the I Am, the Christ self, if you like, very obligingly gives us a little message. And this message is in this form of a picture. And here I see you. And you're inside a tower. And you're looking at this very droopy flower, little pink flower. And what this means is that because you're in a tower, you've constrained yourself. Can't see out in windows very clearly. You've built this edifice, construction of thought and behavior and ideas about yourself. You've surrounded yourself with all of that. And so you're looking at the flower, and the flower represents your energies, your life, what makes you happy in life. And it's wilted. Of course it's wilted, because you're not giving it a chance to go out in the sunshine. So what that symbol says is you need to get out of the tower. Just walk down the stairs. Walk outside. And if you walk outside, that poor old flower will start to come back to life. It just needs a bit of sunshine. But then you'll walk into the future, and the future shows that you have this incredible choice. You're walking down the path. You're coming to a portal which is made up of a pillar on either side with a sign, and the sign is filled with light, and the sign has written on it, "Enter into freedom." And beyond the portal is a new world, and it's a world of light, illumination, understanding. And you need to enter into that, because the next phase of your life, once you get to about 58, 59, 60, you need to become the light. You need to become what illuminates the lives of other people. And so, as some of the psychologists say, we have to do the work. And for you, the work is to leave behind the old thoughts about self. Don't worry about them. They'll look after themselves. They'll disappear. They'll go to someone else. Leave them behind. Walk down your own path. Decide what you want to do, what anyone else wants you to do. Do you know that one of the greatest regrets that old people have when they're on their deathbed is that they didn't do what they wanted to do? Don't be that old person. You're going to do what you want to do, what you decide to do. And in that decision, there's freedom. And when you have that freedom, then you can give it to others. And if there's one thing the world needs, or two things the world needs, it's light and freedom. And if you can be a bearer of both of those, it'll be a great life. So shall it be.